Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, comedian Samson McCormick talks about his favorite teacher from second grade.
And then I got to second grade, and we had my teacher, Miss Diane Walters. I saw this really small, you know, soft-spoken, older white lady, and I thought, I'm going to run this class. Started putting me in check right away. We would go at it, and she had no problem. I was used to walking out of the class, so when she would tell me to get out, like, she kind of took that power away from me. And so she would be like, get out. And I would be like, you don't tell me to get out. I leave when I want. I'm staying. And I think it was maybe a little reverse psychology or something. I don't know, but I would want to stay in class. Then I was like, you don't put me out. I'm staying in class.
Today on the show, comedian Samson McCormick talks about his very favorite teacher from second grade. Stay close.
Hey, this is Samson McCormick, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. I hope you guys enjoyed the show last week with Caroline Georges. Samson, Caroline told a story. Do you know, she's a comedian. Do you know Caroline Georges? Oh, she was on Story Smash, I think, that you were on.
I think she was.
Yeah.
I think that was the first night we met.
Yeah, she's a really funny girl. Yeah, she's a great girl. Anyway, but she told a story that was like on the edge of my seat. Like, it was riveting. And it's about when she was 15 years old, she went to Las Vegas with her friend and their family. And the two little girls, the 15-year-old girls, they got into trouble. Like, they met this guy online, and they ended up meeting him, and no good.
Yeah, like, that sounds...
No good, yeah. So anyway, it's a great episode, though. It's called Trouble in Las Vegas. So go back and listen to that, you guys. But not today. Today I am here with comedian Samson McCormick. And I'm so glad you are here, Samson.
Thank you.
I met you actually at Jim Coughlin's Christmas party.
Christmas party.
It's always a good party, isn't it?
Always a good party. And I'm surprised I was sober enough to have a conversation.
Yeah. You were with some girl. Who were you with?
I was there with Michelle March.
Your friend. Oh, yeah, Michelle. She's great.
Yeah, Michelle is a sweetheart.
Another talent. Yeah, there's so much talent here in LA, isn't there?
This is where we come.
Which I love, actually. And it's everybody in the whole world, really.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you think about, like, the beautiful women, the beautiful people in Los Angeles, it's because... Every homecoming queen or every, you know what I mean? Like every guy who was, you know, the best looking or whatever. These are the people that come here.
Yeah, they do.
And we got them all.
We got them all. Well, I love L.A. It had to grow on me.
Yeah. Oh,
but,
really?
It had to grow on me. Mm-hmm. It's a little too laid back for me sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I'm from the East. I'm from D.C.
Yeah.
And, I would go up to New York all the time whenever I had to do anything. I was on Off-Broadway. You know, I would go up and do the New York comedy clubs. And I was 17 years old.
Wow.
And, you know, I had stars in my eyes when I got to New York. And so it's the city that never sleeps.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, L.A. is, I'm not used to taking meetings at the beach.
Yeah.
When somebody told me that, I was like, are you crazy?
Well, it is funny how people dress out here. Like, nobody has a suit.
Yeah, nobody wears suits. Everybody's really laid back.
Yeah, nobody wears suits. That's an odd thing. You're more likely to find a guy in LA that has a tux for award shows and stuff than a suit.
Than a suit. Suits are boring now.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, it's
you're a good dresser, by the way.
Thank you.
You are slick, man.
Thank you.
And you wear great hats.
Thank you. I love hats. Hats, jewelry, and underwear.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, what's your favorite underwear?
Anything that makes my butt look good.
You're in such great shape. You really are. Now the gyms are closed, of course. So you can't go to the gym. What are you doing?
Dieting, of course. You should always be on some sort. I mean, it's if it works for you. I'm always on a diet, really strict diet.
Like some kind of like clean food diet is what I always think. Like if you're eating something and you don't recognize it, maybe you shouldn't be eating it.
Yeah, if you can't pronounce it, you shouldn't be putting it in your mouth.
Okay. Unless it's a French wine, then you can still drink it.
Yeah, wine is something different, but you know, it's I've been wanting to plant a garden.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I'm very big on like what we're putting in our bodies.
Yeah.
Even if I eat some tortilla chips,
mm-hmm.
sometimes like I eat those and they give me anxiety. It sounds weird.
Wow.
But there are chemicals that they put in a lot of that food.
Sure.
You can feel it. You can feel
no,
the difference.
There's a reason why, you know, the powder is a certain way, like a powdery chip or, you know, what do they call it? Like the crunch factor.
Yeah.
The color factor, all that stuff.
Yeah, all that. So I'm still very natural,
yeah.
You know, and my folks are from the country. So I saw early on people get, you know, things out of the garden. Fresh
yeah.
collard greens.
Yeah, nice.
Fresh turnip greens and mustard yeah. greens and sweet potatoes. And we had walnut trees and things like
That's
that.
That's nice.
So early on, you know, when I first saw McDonald's, I was like maybe 5 or something, and I fell in love with the toys.
Yeah, oh, that's so funny. Yeah, they had that market on the toys and the glasses. Why were the glasses such a big deal? Like you'd collect, you know,
was
maybe that
the,
was Burger King.
That might have been Burger King.
The Mayor McCheese and that whole group of colorful characters.
Yeah. It. I've never been a huge fan. When I was a teenager, I was a fan of fast food. I still remember extra double hamburger
yeah.
with extra ketchup, mustard, and pickles. That was my go-to.
That is so funny.
With a large fry.
That's so funny.
When I started playing football, it was 2 large fries.
Yeah, wow.
But then I started working at Burger King when I was in college. That was my first job.
Yeah.
And I lie to you not, Christina.
Tell me.
I sat there. And I ate 15 hamburgers in one sitting. And I got so sick. And I said, I'm never doing that again.
Wait, were they free? Is that why you were eating them?
I was working in the kitchen. Yeah,
so you could just eat them?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
They didn't care.
Interesting.
They didn't care. And
yeah.
And then I had another side hustle.
Well, you're like a child.
You were 18.
Okay. But still, you got yourself sick from hamburgers.
Oh, yeah. I would put them, and you could eat them fresh. You would put them on the grill, and you could like just take them off the grill, and you could toast that bread, and you could cook them and make them just the way you wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I would put mushrooms on them, and, you know, they have all those different things.
Nice.
And I will never forget. That was the last time I ate a hamburger was 2003 or 4, whenever that was. And I remember I ate 15 hamburgers.
That is hilarious. That is so gross.
I worked. It was disgusting.
It is so gross.
I worked a 10-hour shift. And every hour I would be, you know, I would just be eating. They were delicious. But then after, I remember I felt sick. And I was like, what did I do?
Well, sometimes if you just think about like the size of your stomach, like think about the size of your stomach. It's not a basketball. It's like much smaller, right? So now you're looking like at a honeydew lemon or like a honeydew or a cantaloupe or whatever. And that's the size of your stomach. So if on your plate is more than that, what's going to happen?
You're in trouble.
Where's it going to go?
Yeah, well, some people, they find room.
It's gross, man. I can't. When I see a big, huge plate of food, it just makes me nauseous.
Well, you
it's
know, again, it depends on what you're putting on that plate.
Yeah.
You know, so like today, I made roasted sweet potatoes with garlic pepper.
Wow.
And I put some scallions, onions, and black beans.
See, now that. It sounds so classy to me.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, you're doing onions and scallions. Like, I totally count them to be the same.
Well, yeah, I did sweet onions.
I count all onions as one thing. It's one food to me.
We got
to
eat them with all this crazy stuff going on out here.
Yeah, man. I'm telling you, times are really tricky, and I'm happy that we're still recording Storyworthy, and of course, we're going to continue recording Storyworthy because there's so many great stories out there and plenty of comedians around to talk about it, you know?
Yeah, and the beautiful thing about stories is they all come from different points of views.
Totally.
You know, we just got to get people to not be afraid to tell their stories.
You can learn a lot from somebody if they tell a good, authentic story.
Mm-hmm.
Like more than your resume could tell me or more than your family history. Like you just tell me, talk to me, even for 5 minutes, I get, you know, a story. Because it also is interesting what stories people choose to tell.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like today, I'm excited about your topic called My Second Grade Teacher, I remember my second grade teacher, Mrs. Goldberg,
okay,
because she used to let us watch Mr. Rogers in the classroom.
Mr. Rogers.
And we had like this big ass Zenith TV that would come in on the cart.
They used to roll it in.
Yeah, the janitor
and
cart.
And it was strapped down
That's
on the
right.
thing.
Well,
oh,
sure.
yeah.
And Ms. Goldberg would pop in Mr. Rogers, and it was just like... And also, like, Ms. Goldberg, she was so young. I mean, I didn't think she was young, but when I look back, she was probably like 24.
Really?
Do you mean, like, the teachers, they, you know, all my teachers growing up, they were so young.
Oh, no, all my teachers were old.
Really?
They didn't tell us they were old. They were like, I'm old and I can
really?
Do it. Oh, yeah. I remember all, I can name all of them. My kindergarten teacher was Miss Winecoop. My first grade teacher was Miss Green. Second grade was Miss Katz. Third grade was Miss Elizabeth Whelan Broadway. That lady hated me. Then fourth grade was Miss Katz. I know her first name. I found her on Facebook and I wrote her a note. She blocked me.
Why would she block you? Get out.
You want me to tell you the truth?
What?
Because I killed the class guinea pig.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I didn't do it intentionally, but I would bring it in. I mean, I would come in every day and I would bring like food from the house. I was bringing in like fried chicken and, you know, collard greens and pork rinds and,
oh, no.
and the guinea pig died or something. Because they're not supposed to eat that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
just
sure.
Like, you can't give a dog onions and grapes and chocolate.
Right, right.
And I fed that guinea pig there for about a month. and the guinea pig loved it. You know, because she would see, you know, I had to clean the cage and stuff out all the time. And she would go, why does, and the guinea pig's name was Davy Crockett. And she'd go, why does Davy Crockett love you so much? And I never told her.
Oh, boy.
And it just got really, really sick. Really, really sick. And she said, well, you've been the one responsible for cleaning out this cage and taking care of this animal. So what's been going on? I was like, well, I've been feeding the chicken. And
wow.
And it died shortly after.
Wow. Oh, that's sad. So she blocked you on Facebook. Okay.
She blocked. And plus, I was a class clown.
Yeah.
But she definitely held that guinea pig against me for that entire
You know,
year.
Check this out. In third grade, I had a teacher named Mrs. Harry, and she yelled at me because I knocked down the solar system that was strung from corner to corner in the classroom because it was raining outside and we had to stay in for recess. And she was mad at me because she says, Chrissy Blackburn, you made all the boys chase you around the classroom. And, you know, you pulled down the solar system. But she yelled at me so hard. I shit you not. Like, how can I make this up? She yelled at me so badly that I got the hiccups. And the hiccups didn't leave me for like 6 days.
Oh, that teacher was pissed.
And my mom had to take me to the doctor, and then I had to see this chiropractor until I finally stopped hiccuping. And then they changed my teacher.
Wow.
And then I had Miss Huber, who was much better. But I was still so afraid if I saw Miss Harry in the hallway, because I thought, like, she knows that I left her classroom because she yelled at me and I got the hiccups.
Did that teacher ever talk to you anymore?
No. She was a bitch, man. I hated that. I hated that Mrs. Harry. Well, it is interesting because you spend such a good amount of time with your teachers growing up.
Who did you hate the most?
I hated Mrs. Harry because of that. And then I hated Mrs. Datt because she made us do this. You know, she was like the handwriting teacher when we had to learn cursive.
Okay.
And she would just have this ruler. She wasn't a nun, but she had a ruler and she would slap us. And she would say, round, round, ready, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You know, oh, you have very nice O's. Oh, look at your O's. Chrissy Blackburn, what is wrong with your O's? Like, I wasn't a good student. So
you were a good student.
Mrs.
I think
Harry and Mrs. Datt, those are the two horrible ones.
I think the issue is some teachers, it's not an easy job.
No, not at all.
But, you know, I think some teachers bring in their issues, and I was smart enough to know that when I was growing up. I remember, I think I was in seventh grade, Miss Young.
Yeah.
I hated math growing up.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Oh, my God. And Mrs. Young... came in, I made her cry one time.
Oh no.
Cause she wasn't nice.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she wouldn't, I'm the type, I usually, once you show me something one time, if you explain it really well, I get it the first
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that about myself. And so I asked her, I said, can you explain that to me? And she said, if you aren't get, she was an Asian lady. Mm-hmm. And I used to mock her all the time. I'm not going to do that now because it's wrong. But she used to say, and she didn't speak really good English. Mm-hmm. And so she would be like, you know, if you don't get, she said, you just don't get. Okay. And,
wow. And she would say that, if you don't get, you just don't get.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
And I saw her husband and her arguing in the parking lot. So in front of our whole class, and this was probably 1997 or 8 or something like that, I stood up, because I had been watching too much Jerry Springer. I stood up in front of the whole class, and I was like, you're just mad because your husband doesn't want your ass, and you take it out on us.
You did not.
I did.
Wait, how old were you?
In 1998. I was probably 13 or something, 12, unbelievable. 14, something like that.
My daughter's age. And so you just stood up and said that.
I've always told it like it is.
That is too funny.
Should I have done it? Maybe not. But I knew what the issue was. And I said, it's not fair that you come in and take that out on us. And she said, get out of my class. And well, she didn't say it. She was like, get out of class, get out. And she said, I hate you. Like when I was leaving, I struck a nerve. And she sent me down to Mr. Calvin's office, who was our principal. And Mr. Calvin was this really cool older black dude who he got us, you know. And yeah. I went and I sat in his office, and he said, what did you do now? And I told him, I said, Miss Young was pissing me off. And I stood up and I said something to her, and she got mad. And he said, what did you say? I said, I'm not telling you. And he said, well, she obviously sent you down here for a reason. So what did you say? And I said, I told her she was mad that her husband doesn't want her, and she takes that out on us. And I remember he turned his back to me, and I saw his shoulders, you know, hunching like that.
Oh, my God. That is hilarious.
And he wouldn't let me hear him laugh.
But he was losing.
He was cracking up. And he turned around. And he put his glasses back on.
Yeah.
He wiped his eyes first, and he put his glasses back on. And he said, oh, man, you know I'm going to have to send you home, right? And he sent me home for 2 days.
Oh, wow.
My mom was working at a nurse's office, and I used to get beatings growing up. And I knew that if I told my mom that I got suspended, she was going to tear my ass off the hinges. So I went home and I was like, hey, mom, can I lied to her, and I was like, I'm getting bullied at school. And I said, you know, I don't want to like walk. Can I just ride my bike to school? And she was like, yeah. And so I took my bike and I started just riding around Maryland where we lived at. And I would come home, you know, when school was out.
Well, wait, did you go home? Because you knew she was at work. So mm-hmm. Could you go home during the day and get food?
Well, what I started doing was I would leave the back door open, you know, because up until I got a certain age, I didn't even have a key to the house. So we had a living room that was on the back of the house. Mm-hmm. I left that door open, and then I would leave. And then I would, when I knew she would like go to work or whatever, I might call from a payphone or something and say, right. Hey, mom, you know, they're serving something at school you don't want me to have. I was smart. I was like, they're serving like a pizza. I know you don't want me eating pizza, but it looks really good today. Can I please have it? And she would be like, yeah, whatever. And I'd be like, are you at work? Yeah, you know. And then I would come back home.
Wow.
And I would,
you were conniving, yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. I get it. Well, I'm anxious to hear about your second grade teacher, because they obviously made an impact on you.
Yeah.
By the way, how are you sleeping? Are you sleeping well?
Sometimes.
I mean, the whole coronavirus, all of this is, you know, it's scary. It's funny, though, because, like, what's happening now today on Wednesday the 18th might not be what's happening when this airs next week on March 24th. I mean, Lord knows, anything can happen.
You know, anything can happen. I'm not really worried about it.
Now, you seem very cool and calm.
Yeah, and some of my friends think I'm crazy, but I guess that's another reason why when shit is hitting the fan with them, they call me. Because I'm usually like, okay, well, what are you going to do? And, you know, even if you can't do anything, what is freaking out going to do about it?
I hear you. No, I hear you. And I am also sleeping better because I have new sheets. I have new sheets and I'm holding them right now. I'm not holding the sheets. Samson and I are in my bedroom. No. Wait a minute. That's wrong. I'm holding, this is like the little bag that the sheets come in. Isn't it pretty?
It's pretty and the cloth feels really good. The material.
It is. It's called Etude. That's the name. Etude. It's clean bamboo. I don't know if you've heard of that, but it's like the holy grail of fabric, honestly. It really does. These sheets make my 1300 count Egyptian cotton sheets feel like sandpaper. I mean, honestly, these are like so much better than my other sheets. And organic clean bamboo is extremely breathable because it regulates your temperature and improves the quality of sleep. And I need that because I get night sweats. That's what happens at my age.
You get night sweats.
I do. Well, not as much anymore, but this has definitely helped because I love these sheets. Etude, you guys. You should try them. These amazing sheets have a 30-day risk-free trial, so if you're not fully satisfied, you can return the sheets for a full refund, and they even cover the shipping on the returns. I also got a duvet cover from them. You see this color? It's like It's like a soft green. I really love it.
Very beautiful.
Yeah, it's really neat. They've got a lot of cool products. Etude sheets, you guys. They're soft as silk, breathable as linen, but at the price of cotton. You're going to love them. And when you support my sponsors, you guys, you know that you are supporting me, and I thank you. And right now, my story-worthy listeners will get 20% off your sheet set and free shipping. Just enter story at checkout for 20% off your entire order. Again, you guys, you'll get 20% off if you head over to etude.com and enter the promo code STORY. This is a good deal.
A really good deal.
I love great sponsors that I can get behind. It makes a difference. Do you know what I mean?
It does.
Because I like it.
It does. And it's, I don't know, it's always, I mean, there's so many great things out there.
I know, there really are. But now I got a new one for spring. And the color makes my bedroom like brighter. I love it. It's good. Anyway, you guys, before we get to Samson's story, I did want to remind you to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at StoryWorthy. And also check out StoryWorthyPodcast.com and then join my mailing list. Yes, please. Thank you. I would appreciate it. And don't forget, you guys, to head over to Apple Podcasts and give me a good review. I don't know why this matters so much, but it does.
It matters a lot. Yes, it helps so much.
Yeah.
It definitely helps.
Anyway, you guys. All right, you guys. He's here right now. Samson McCormick. You've heard him talking. Recently, you just finished your fifth comedy special called Church Boy.
Yes.
I love that name, Church Boy.
Church Boy.
You grew up in a church. Is that the idea?
Oh, my God. Yes, I was tortured for the first 20 years of my life.
So were your parents ministers of the church, or what was it?
My mom is a self-proclaimed evangelist.
Mm-hmm.
My granddad, he was a pastor.
Her father?
My mom's father. Mm-hmm. A lot of my uncles were pastors or deacons. On my father's side, my brother is a minister of a church in North Carolina.
This is unbelievable.
And I come from a long line of very, they were either or.
Wow.
We either had people who were in the arts or people who were in the church.
I see.
And there were no lines in between.
Don't you think like ministers and I mean, they're speakers, they're public speakers.
Yeah, they are. But in a different fashion than what we do.
But they're entertainers.
Of course, if you are.
In that respect, it sort of runs through.
It sort of runs through. I mean, I think, especially if you are a minister in a black church, in a black Baptist or Pentecostal church denomination, there's a certain cadence that you have to speak, and you have to let people know that things will be all right.
I can't wait to see this special because it seems like it would write itself. I mean, just what you just told me is unbelievable.
Well, I think I did talk about the church a little bit. If I was doing the type of comedy that I do now back in the 50s and 60s when, even speaking up against the church as we know it today is, I would definitely probably have been burned at the stake. But I do think that anything that you're given that you aren't allowed to question or have open dialogue around is dangerous. It's something that you should hold up and look at.
Yeah, absolutely. That's interesting. And that's what makes you such a unique performer because you do like speak the truth. You speak your mind. Mm-hmm. You're very honest. I mean, you were on Story Smash and you won, which I'm thrilled about. And I can't wait for you to come back and do another one. But you have a presence on stage that's very calming, and then when you start to talk, you speak very clearly, as I screw up the word clearly, and no, but you you're so intelligent.
Thank you.
It really comes across. It really does. You've got a lot of stuff on YouTube that I watched. You also have a brand new comedy thriller called Party and Play.
Oh, God.
And what about that? When was that? What was that all about?
Oh, God. I don't know. Somebody gave me some real good stuff to smoke, and I tease people. I say, you got to get high and watch it, because I was high when I wrote it. And yeah, I think one of my friends that lives up in Humboldt County gave me something, and I just sat down and I was writing, and I got this great idea. And it's a fun story.
It is a fun story. Basically, this guy wants to go to the Beyonce concert, but he doesn't have money to get the ticket.
He got those tickets.
You're right. So what happened? So how did he get the tickets?
He overdrew his bank account.
I see.
And when that rent was due, they were in some trouble.
Yeah.
And
so
there was some twists and turns in that story. I'm not going to give it away.
It sounds kind of cool.
Look at it. It's part comedy.
Yeah.
It's part drama. It's part horror.
Yeah, part thriller. It's a thriller.
Yeah,
like party and play.
It keeps you like twisting and turning.
Right on,
and,
man.
Yeah.
And you have headline venues all across the country, including the historic Howard Theater. That's very beautiful. That's in D.C.
The Howard Theater in D.C.
And then you were at the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts.
Oh, yes.
Was that a big deal?
It was a huge deal.
It's a huge deal.
Huge deal.
That stage is so big.
Well, they have several stages.
I see. I didn't know
you
that.
Know, they have about, I believe, 6 stages in there.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So there's the main stage, of course.
That's the one I'm probably thinking of.
But still, each stage in there is huge.
Wow.
Each stage in there is huge. And to have the honor of headlining any stage at the Kennedy Center.
Unbelievable. That is really exciting. And then it says in 2018, you became the first LGBT comic ever to perform at the Smithsonian Institution.
Yes.
And what building was that in?
At the National Museum of African American History and Culture. So
I can't believe it. That must have been amazing.
Yeah, it was incredible. And for anybody who hasn't been to D.C., there is right downtown, a few miles of land, and different Smithsonian institutions are there.
Sure.
And I was the first LGBT artist to headline one of them.
That is really exciting. DC is just unbelievable. You could just walk around there forever, can't you?
It's 10 miles, so you can get around there in a whole day.
There's so much, though, to see. There's so much to learn.
Yeah.
Did you ever go to the Holocaust Museum there?
Yes, I've been to the Holocaust
that is
Museum.
Wild, isn't
it's
it?
It's near the Smithsonian.
Yeah, that is a wild museum. I think it's part of the Smithsonian, isn't it?
I'm not sure about that.
Isn't that just the umbrella of like our government's art? Is it?
I'm not sure about
that. No, I don't feel very smart.
No, don't feel bad because there's so many. But I mean, there are just tons of museums. It's right near the Lincoln Memorial.
Yeah, sure.
The MLK Memorial is down there. There's just so many great things to see.
Yeah, there really are. And you have been featured on BET, TV1, Viceland, and then you also have had, like we were talking about, 5 comedy specials. This is your 5th. Your other one was called Don't Make Me Take Off My Earrings. Another one was The Shade of It All, and That Bitch Better Be Funny, which was considered for a Grammy nomination in 2014. That's very, very exciting.
And I did another film in 2016 or 17, and it was nominated for an Oscar award. It's called I Live Here.
There it is. Yeah. I see it. I Live Here. Wow. That's exciting. You guys can find Samson over at his website at samsoncomedy.com and also on Twitter at @officialsamson. Yes. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Samson McCormick. Woo! Yay!
And Instagram. Don't forget Instagram,
too. Oh, yeah.
Too.
And what are you there?
At Samson McCormick. SAMPSONMCCORMICK. Yeah, so we had a conversation about teachers, and my issue has always been I don't like being confined. I hate rules. I like to be able to come and go as I please. I don't like answering to anybody. I defy authority. So you can probably see how I've had issues with the church and other authoritative institutions as I've grown up. And so, of course, my very first One of those situations was when I was growing up, you know, going to school every day. That's when you first learn how to interact with other kids. One thing that I've never lost since I've been a kid is the brutal honesty. Mm-hmm. I'm brutally honest. Thankfully, I've learned tact as I've gotten older, you know, and so there's an expression called by Winston Churchill. It's a quote that says tact is having the ability to tell somebody to go to hell and have them look forward to the trip. And, you know, I've always just been like that. You know, if you want the truth, call me, I'm going to give it to you. And I'm going to give it to you straight. And you might be mad at me for a little while, but you're going to call me back and say, I'm glad you told me what you told me. So of course, you know, when I was in school, you know, I was one of those people or one of those students that, you know, if I was in class and I didn't like what was being taught or if I didn't agree with it or if I felt like the discussion around it was unbalanced or the teacher was leaving something out, I would get up and I would walk out of class. even in first grade, I got up and I left out of class and I walked back home. I was like, fuck this class, I'm gone.
What did your mom say?
I got a beating and I had to go back and apologize in front of the class. And my mother knew that, you know, if she just told me to go do it, I wasn't going to do it. So she would make me stand up in front of the class and she would take me there. She would take the switch. And this is back in the late 80s, early 90s when, you know, your teacher could tap your hand with the ruler, you know, parents could spank kids and things like that. And so she would take me up there. I've got spankings in front of the class before.
That's so upsetting.
Not really.
What was that like?
It was what it was then. I mean, I'm pretty sure kids now would probably find it humiliating and things like that. But, you know, that was the law of the land back then. And I was willing to get spankings for things. If I believed enough in it, I was willing to get that spanking. And I was even able to start laughing at them when I would get them. And my mom was like, you're crazy. So, yeah. So, you know, I had a lot of issues in school. Just because of authority, I always have believed in asking really tough questions about things. You know, I have always had a way with words. And I would stand up in my chair in front of the class and I would crack jokes and say my shit. And, you know, I would get the class's attention.
You're like the Bart Simpson.
A little bit. I was bad. In a good way. A lot of people say, oh, well, it was good.
Yeah. You were popular, I bet.
I was very popular in school. And that was hard because when I got to college, I wasn't. And I could barely get through college because of that. By the end of it, I was. But, it was just hard because I was always on student government. I always, was in theater. I just always loved words and things like that. And I think it was like that because I couldn't speak at home. You know, it was very, children should be seen, not heard.
Yeah.
And so I learned first how to write. And then, I think the fact that I could go to school and I had, this audience is what I love. Because at home, I couldn't speak. And so I had those issues. I would make, you know, D's and F's. No, in Maryland, we got E's. We didn't get F's in Maryland. We got E's. And then I got to second grade. And we had my teacher, Miss Diane Walters. I saw this really small, you know, soft-spoken, older white lady. And I thought, I'm going to run this class. So she started putting me in check right away. We would go at it, and she had no problem. I was used to walking out of the class. So when she would tell me to get out, she kind of took that power away from me. And so she would be like, get out. And I would be like, you don't tell me to get out. I leave when I want. I'm staying. And I think it was maybe a little reverse psychology or something. I don't know. But I would want to stay in class. Then I was like, you don't put me out. I'm staying in class. And so for the first couple of semesters, we had this back and forth. But she cared in this very assertive way. She was very assertive with me and everything. And she cared, and I think she saw something in me that maybe I didn't know that I had. She would walk me to the car every day after school, to my mom's car, and she would take me, and she would open the door, and she would put me in there, and she'd be like, whew, he had a really rough day today. She would update my mom every day, and she started pulling me aside. She would be like, you know, you're really funny. And I didn't know what that meant. I knew I could make people laugh. She'd be like, you're really funny. And she would be like, so I tell you what, let's make a deal. She was like, because we keep having these arguments in my class and you're not going to win. I'm in charge. But this is what I want you to do. Every Wednesday, I want you to write a half a page or whatever you want to write. And I want you to stand up in front of the class and you can do it if you agree to be quiet the rest of the week. And I would get my 5 minutes every Wednesday in exchange for doing my work and being quiet. And it didn't work right away. But, you know, and then it got to a point where instead of 5 minutes, she would give me, I think, 7 minutes. So every Wednesday, it was the Samson show. And I could stand up in front of the class and do my thing. And in this really weird way, I started to, you know, she was very encouraging, you know, because I had been put in like special ed and, you know, things like that. And she was like, you're not, she talked to me like she would sit me down after class and she walked me to the car and she would have my mom and my stepdad come in and we would have these conversations and she would be like, there's nothing wrong with him. He just learns differently. He absorbs information differently. And so she took the time with me and she helped me to develop and gave me the things that I need. And I'm pretty sure she did that with other kids, but she made me feel special enough to want to come in and learn and do my thing. And so at the beginning of that semester, I've always been a great writer. So I got like A's and B's in writing, you know, but everything else on my report card, social skills, behavior, all that stuff were either at the best, it would be a C.
Yeah.
Everything else would probably be D or E, especially social skills, because I didn't give a damn, you know, so I would get E's.
But social skills, isn't that like being, you know, having a big personality and being super friendly?
Yeah, but it's also how do you present it to people? Like, you don't just kick the door open and come in class late and go, hey, everybody, whatever, you know, getting up, erasing the warm up off the board with your hand, you know, yeah. Like I would lock her out of the classroom. I would.
So I you weren't bad. Good. Yeah, you weren't. Bad. Okay.
You know, jumping across, you know, she would try to catch me to put me out and I would like jump across the desk and things like that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I gave that lady hell and she broke down and she told my mom, like, I remember she cried. And I think she was the first teacher that I saw cry, but it wasn't because I made her cry. It was because she cared so much. And she said that I reminded her of her son, you know, and she said, except for I wasn't violent, but, you know, she had a violent son at the house. And she said that he pushed their daughter in the pool or something like that. She was a toddler. So she was like two. And, you know, you got this dude who's like seven or something like that, pushes a 2-year-old in like 5 feet of water, you know, and he was like kind of violent. He would have outbursts and she would be like, so he doesn't have that about me. She would be like, but they need the same things. And so maybe it was something that she knew how to deal with me.
Wow.
And from the beginning of that semester till the third grade, the third semester, I almost made the honor roll. I missed it by one grade.
Wow.
And so I think she bought me a gift or something. The teachers weren't supposed to do that. And she could have gotten in trouble because I was on Ritalin.
Yeah.
Because of hyperactivity, I had ADHD. And so my mom would put the medicine in a baggie and I had to take it to school and she had to like give it to me before class.
Mm-hmm.
And this medicine would make me just basically sit at the desk and stare off into space.
That's scary.
Yeah. So and she saw that too. So what she would do is she had me to come in and I would give her the medicine and she would throw it in the trash.
Wow.
She says, you're not taking that. She was like, I want you to be fully functional and do you, but we're going to help you control that. And I liked her so much. And,
I love her so
and
much.
And we started developing this relationship to the point where I was so angry by that third semester that I did not make the honor roll, that I was determined to make the honor roll by the fourth semester. And that fourth semester, I made straight A's.
Oh, wow.
I made straight A's and I made the honor roll. And,
they had an honor roll in second grade? Mm-hmm. That's
you would
so
get a certificate.
Yeah.
And we had an assembly, and yeah. Everybody who made a certain grade. So to go from all D's and all E's and a C, you know, and I think I would get an A in writing or whatever, to all A's.
Was your mom just thrilled?
Oh, yeah. You know, and my mom and I, we haven't had the easiest relationship, but I will never forget how proud she was a me when I made the honor roll.
That is amazing. That
first time to go from, and this is since I started school now.
Yeah.
D's and E's, barely passing, you know. I would like went on little technicalities, like, you know. Sometimes I think it was because the teachers were ready to get me out of their classroom and they would just pass me.
Yeah, they do just push kids on, obviously. Oh, yeah. So her name was Miss Walter, right?
Miss Diane Walters.
And so now, at the end of second grade, of course, you have to move on to third grade.
Oh, that was so hard.
But you still see her all the time, I bet. In the hallway or whatever.
Well, we graduated. So I remember that summer, that was the summer that Flintstones came out with John Goodman. You remember that movie?
Yeah, sure.
I will never forget that movie because we left the honor roll assembly and my mom and my stepdad took me to McDonald's. They got me a Happy Meal and an ice cream cone. And I got, like, I had that honor roll situation around my chest.
You know, like sash?
Yeah, they used to give you, like, a sash or something.
And I made so sweet.
Top honors in class.
Wow.
And they took me to see Flintstones.
That's a great memory.
And I think I changed schools. And I remember I never saw Miss Walters in person again.
Wow.
But I remember I snuck up to the school because I used to play hooky. I snuck up to the school and the way that the classrooms were set up, they had back doors.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to see her and I snuck around the back of the school and I peeped in her window and I saw her teaching another class. That's the last time I saw her.
Wow.
And I've always wanted to find her again.
But how old do you think she was at the time?
Oh, she had to be maybe 50.
That is an older teacher.
She was an older lady.
Yeah, for sure. And so now she's probably...
She might be 75 or 80 by now. Okay.
I wonder if she's... I mean, I'm not kidding. But I wonder if she's on Facebook.
I tried to find her on Facebook.
You
I
did?
Couldn't find her. I found the other one. I told you she blocked me.
I can't believe that.
She blocked me because I killed the class guinea pig. I was bad.
Yeah. You but, sound like you were bad.
I wasn't bad. I was just busy.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't think before I did stuff. I was in foster homes when I was growing up and stuff.
So. I see. They took you out of your mom's home?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
For child abuse?
We'll talk about that later.
That's but, intense. I'm so but, sorry.
I overcame a lot of stuff as a kid.
Well, you're such a natural comedian. And a lot of times, obviously, comedians do come from struggles and hard times. And, you know, the impetus to be funny is because you're getting that, you know, good dopamine when somebody laughs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's not unusual for comedians to come from troubled pasts. But it seems like your teacher is the one who really gave you your first open mic.
Yeah, Miss Diane Walters, she taught me how to, she would tell me all the time because like my mom thought, and I guess it was because even though my stepdad was there, he wasn't really involved with me.
Sure.
He didn't like me that much. He would beat me up and stuff like that.
Oh God. And oh so, God, you're kidding.
Yeah,
oh.
He would, it was bad. And so not having that, it was very like obligatory. Like she mm-hmm. had to like beg him, hey, can you sit down mm-hmm. with him and play video games yeah. and stuff like that. And I didn't want to play no video games. I wanted to be outside making mud pies. Like yeah. I didn't give a damn about no video games.
Good,
like,
yeah.
Oh, well, this is a fag, you know. And
he would say that?
Oh, yeah. And
he would
beat me and things like that.
And your mom knew that?
Oh, yeah. She had to pull him off of me.
How do you, that must be very difficult to know.
You know, I talk to people about things like that, and it was rough or whatever, but I guess you go through it, it becomes so normal to you mm-hmm. that it doesn't hurt.
Do you not have a relationship with him anymore? Or?
No, we don't yeah. talk at all. Yeah. I haven't seen or heard from him since my mom broke up with him when I was like 13.
I see. Yeah, of course.
And then my mom and I, we've had a very rocky relationship. And so right now we're okay.
Mm-hmm. Does she still live in D.C.?
She still lives in D.C. You know, we don't talk a lot. And it's hard. But I mean, it's and she's never really wanted me to like speak about it. I did a movie about it actually called A Different Direction.
Wow.
And she was very angry that I did that movie.
Did she see the movie?
Oh, yeah. She saw it. Wow. When I put it online, she saw it. She was not happy.
Did you use any real names, though, right?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No, I didn't use any real names. But, you know, a lot of people have those type of relationships with their parents.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I didn't write it to be malicious. In fact, the movie was her idea. She's the one who, you know, we were on the phone. I don't know if we were arguing or not. But I was very depressed, you know, and, you know, I wasn't getting a lot of work and things like that. So she was like, why don't you write something, you know, write about our relationship. And so she was really mad at me. And then it won an award. And she called me and she was like, I guess you did all right.
Wow, that's funny. Do you have brothers and sisters then?
Yeah, I have two brothers.
And same mom, same dad.
No, we got, Papa was a Rolling Stone.
I see.
So we have different moms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I have a sister somewhere out there. We don't know where she is.
Yeah. Wow. It is so interesting when we get a little bit older, you can kind of come to an acceptance of, you know, one of those thoughts of like, well, they did the best they could. I mean, I'm not saying that that's your mom's situation, but
I really do believe that she did the best that she could.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I've gotten older, I'm not bitter. Mm-hmm. I'm not bitter. But there is this, I've learned to define love differently.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I do think that love is very conditional. I don't believe in unconditional love, you know. And so once I started defining love and hate both differently, I started to look at our relationship differently. And I was able to accept her more as a human being,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just mom, which is supposed to be like this superhero and this and that. But our parents are people.
I know.
And they're flawed and they come with fears and they come with all these baggage.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, our duty as people is to examine it and make sure that we do a little bit better.
Yeah, that's really intelligent. You know, I know when I was born, my dad was 33 and I'm the youngest of six.
Mm-hmm.
So he's 33 years old and he has six kids. Of course he's pissed off.
Of course.
You know what I mean? Of course. So when I look back and I see, you know, the trajectory of his life and how much he had to work to support us all and stuff, I think like, man, he, you know, obviously sacrificed a lot. And, you know, he's passed away now. But I guess I'm just saying like, even toward, you know, the last 20 years of his life, you know, we would joke with him like, Dad, don't you remember how you screamed at us? How you'd say, your horse's ass, your shit for brains. Don't be such a horse's ass, shit for brains. Like it was constantly, you're skating on thin ice.
Yeah.
And it was this authoritative style of parenting. He didn't know any better.
They don't know
he any wasn't better. Nurtured by his parents, and so then how does he know how to nurture? So I think it's you know, now I have my own daughter, and I think, like, can you imagine if I went into Alabama right now and I said, Alabama, you horse's ass. You know what I mean? Like, right. Alabama, don't be such a shit for brains. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy.
Well, you know.
But it's different parenting.
It's different parenting. And I even, you know, I take care of my niece sometimes.
Nice.
Who's, I think she's about to turn 11 next month. And I had a lot of anxiety when I used to go pick her up. You know, because I used to be like, oh, my God, like, I don't want to do this the wrong way.
Yeah.
And, I'm very, when I deal with anybody now, I observe. I just kind of step back.
Yeah.
And I deal with people and I respond and interact accordingly.
Yeah.
As opposed to taking anything personally or.
Boy,
or
that's such a lesson in life. And it seems like Miss Walters, it seems like by her making you harvest in your comedy for that specific amount of time, you know, that 1 5-minute period a week or whatever, she was trying to get you to not be so scattered with your energy, but put your energy in those moments of importance.
It worked.
And it does work because then when you think of like a comedian on stage with just a microphone for 15 minutes or whatever the time period, it's such a, you know, it's a good amount of time, but it's so much power to have the microphone for that amount of time.
Yeah.
So she really did the right thing.
She did. And you know, also she made me realize I could do anything I put my mind to.
Yeah.
That was the first time that I had like concentrated all my energy, all my mental forces and put it into taking it in there and doing all my work. I did all my homework. I think a few times I even started turning down her Wednesday situation.
Yeah, wow.
And I was just happy to be in that class with her. And
man, I'm telling you, isn't that something? Like, that is what a real teacher should be.
Yeah.
Like, somebody who can reach each child in their own way. Yeah, because all kids do learn differently.
They do learn differently. And yeah, they up until then, you know, everybody said, oh, you know, he's special. He's special ed, yeah. You know. And mind you, like, I'm from the hood.
Yeah.
So I was also, because of media, you know, what you learn in a lot of the movies and a lot of what you hear at home, like, I was taught, you know, that white people didn't care much about black people. And she was the best teacher I had.
That is so, so wonderful. I love this story. This is like a really good, like a heartfelt story with meaning. And yeah, it just goes to show what a difference an adult can make in a kid's life.
And she helped my mom too. She helped the way we interacted better.
Yeah, like, she set an example.
Well, yeah. And she would ask my mom, she would be like, well, you know, he's doing this. So, you know, she would ask my mom, well, what does he do at home? And my mom would tell her, and she'd be like, well, how do you respond to it? Oh, well, I do this and that. She'd be like, don't you think that maybe you should try this? And our relationship at home got better.
Wow.
She is, out of all my teachers, she's the one that stands out the most. She's the favorite. I wish I could have had her all 12 years I was in primary.
That's a beautiful story. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Samson. Really, you're such a talent. And I can't wait for Story Smash to come back, obviously. Yes. And for, I could see you winning a couple of these, man.
Yeah.
Now, we've been playing down there for almost 3 years. And there's been about 4 people who have won Story Smash 3 times each. Nobody's gone 4 times. I have a feeling you might be that guy.
Yeah.
It's super fun. You guys can find out more about Samson over at his website, samsoncomedy.com. Friend, you have to stay healthy for everybody. Would you please do that? Yes.
I promise.
Yeah.
I'm working on it. You know,
I'm pretty impressed with how many people are taking this seriously in terms of the social distancing, and, you know, people are doing the right. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. The media hype is scary, but then, like, I drive around Los Angeles and I look around and people are being pretty kind. Are you finding that?
Yeah. You know, yeah, people are, for the most part, you know what I see. And I would like to see more people in our neighborhoods, like, reach out to. And it's hard because, you know, it's all in a lot of people's minds. It's all about self-preservation and this and that. But we have to, you know, reach out to the elderly. And,
I agree.
You know, take care of each other. Because that's the only way we're all going to come out of this all right is taking care of each other.
Yeah. And hopefully, you know, in November, the election will change things around. Oh, boy. There's a lot going on, man.
One day at a time.
I am very happy we have stories. I'll tell you that. And so thank you again for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. All right, you guys, I got to wrap it up. I want to thank you so much for tuning in today. Find Samson over there on Twitter and Instagram at Samson McCormick. And then you can find me over there as well at Storyworthy. And I joined TikTok. Can you believe it?
Oh, my God.
I know. I know. You're rolling your eyes. I totally get it. But I did, because I want to make sure I hit everybody. So over on TikTok, I'm at Storyworthy. All right, you guys. I want to thank the sponsors on the show today. Again, Etitude is just a wonderful brand of sheets and bedding and even bathroom products. So go over to Etitude.com, you guys. And when you check out, use the promo code STORY and you'll get 20% off. Hooray! All right, you guys, one more time on behalf of the very talented Samson McCormick. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Story-Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.